The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome back Tuesday, March 28th, 2023. I am Seth Leibson. The phone number is 602-508-0960. That's 602-5080-960. I wouldn't normally prejudice the jury this way, but this is one of those monologues that I think is just a little extra important, folks. We are supposed to believe in certain fictions, aren't we? Professor Jay Budachevsky puts it in the Wall Street Journal this morning that, for example, most people simply don't believe men can get pregnant or that Abraham Lincoln was in favor of slavery. And yet there are industries dedicated, articles published, cartoons made, human resources speakers paid to promote such things. Professor Budachevsky tells us too many people look at such things and ignore or dismiss them as culture wars, as not quite as important as, say, economics or foreign policy. And yet, he goes on to write, quote, "Unfortunately, derangement has real-world consequences. The identity ideologies pose an existential threat for the culture, which increasingly affects the everyday lives of individuals, family, and children. Explain why it's not serious that we surgically disfigure children and pump them full of hormones to prevent the onset of puberty, or that we call this care. Explain why it's not serious for medical journals to publish articles discussing whether surgical amputation is the best treatment for people with sound limbs who identify as paraplegics. Explain why it's not serious that drag queen story hours have become an accepted event in many public schools and libraries. Finally, explain why we needn't grieve that so many of us pretend these things aren't happening, are afraid to speak up, or think having a burning concern about them is a distraction from more important things. The normalization of disorder and empowerment of lunacy are not to be taken lightly. Now there's a serious idea. The normalization of disorder and the empowerment of lunacy. Think about where this comes from. The problem may very well be nihilism, as the political philosopher Leo Strauss put it. Nihilism, the root of which is nil or nihil or nothing, is the belief that all truths are subjective and nothing can be known or even really communicated. There is no such thing as objective fact. There is no such thing as truth. Those familiar with its cognate in theology, atheism, will recognize the notion that the danger is not that an atheist believes in nothing, it's that the atheist will believe in anything. And so, too, is that true of the nihilist. The nihilist does, in fact, have beliefs. Nihilists do, in fact, have their own truths. It's just that they are their own truths and nobody else's. Thus, they can or will believe anything while vigorously arguing against someone else's denial of it. A nihilist will deny nature and trust human will. For example, as in a nihilist's belief that men can get pregnant and that there is nothing wrong with it except the denial that it can be so. That is always a wrong to and for the nihilist. Leo Strauss put it that nihilism is the rejection of the principles of civilization as such. A nihilist is then a man who knows the principles of civilization, if only in a superficial way. Civilization and not culture. For I've noticed that many nihilists are great lovers of culture, as distinguished from and opposed to civilization, and yet we never really ask what it is that is supposed to be cultivated in a culture. Do we? The human or the human condition, humanity, humaneness seem pretty good answers as to what should be cultivated, but we never quite get to them, do we? We rather promote the avant-garde and simply paste the word culture on it and thus claim it is beyond review or rebuke or opinion. Examples abound, from drag queen story hours to paintings of Mary covered in cow dung or artworks taking imagery of Jesus Christ and placing him in an artist's urine. And who is to judge these things? This raises the question of what is not only judged or not to be judged, but accepted and not to be accepted, promoted and not to be promoted. In our school wars, one side thinks it's just fine to teach books like Lawn Boy, L-A-W-N, Lawn Boy. Another side thinks it is not. Lawn Boy is one of the most popularly debated books in these fights over what's to be accepted and what not in our elementary schools. Here's an excerpt from that book. I can't read it all, but it goes something like this. In fourth grade at church youth group, meeting out in the bushes, I touched Doug Goebbels, word I won't say, and he touched mine, word I won't say. In fact, there was even some mouths involved. You flip over to page 91. What if I told you I touched another guy's, word I won't say? What if I told you I sucked it? I was 10 years old, but it's true. I put Doug Goebbels, word I won't say, in my mouth. I was in fourth grade. It was no big deal. He sucked mine, too. And you know what? It wasn't terrible, close quote. I have no idea why a book like that is now part of our school libraries and teachings. I guess we figured out all the lessons from The Little Prince of Antoine Saint-Exupéry and realized it was now time to move on, or move forward, as the avant-garde would have it. Some think it okay to expose children to this kind of pornography or cross-dressing or transgendered adults in burlesque shows, and others think it isn't. Who's to say? But there is one thing we are not supposed to say, and you know what that is, don't you? We are not supposed to say that exposure to any of this leads to any kind of promotion or ideation of any of this. None of this is ever, after all, allowed to be called suggestive, is it? And to accept that, we have to take leave of all our senses, don't we? Some decades ago, Professor Irving Kristol put it this way: what reason is there to think that anyone was ever corrupted by a book? That question, oddly enough, is asked by the very same people who seem convinced that advertisements in magazines or displays of violence on television do indeed have the power to corrupt. It is also asked, incredibly enough and in all sincerity, by people like university professors and school teachers whose very lives provide all the answers one could want. After all, if you believe that no one was ever corrupted by a book, you also have to believe that no one was ever improved by a book or a play or a movie. You have to believe, in other words, that all art is morally trivial and that consequently all education is morally irrelevant. No one, not even a university professor, really believes that. I really think there's a volume of logic in that point and think it worthy of repeating. If you believe that no one was ever corrupted by a book, you also have to believe that no one was ever improved by one, or a play, or a movie. That all art is morally trivial, and all education morally irrelevant. Does anyone truly believe that? You know who doesn't believe it? Something called the advertisement industry. As Rich Lowry put it, the Geico gecko can convince us to buy car insurance. Donald Trump can post a meme on Truth Social, and it supposedly convinces people to take baseball bats to Manhattan DA Alvin Bragg. Someone can use the wrong pronoun, and it can convince a trans person to harm himself or herself. But what can't possibly happen, we are supposed to believe, we are taught, is that the constant discussion and celebration of transgenderism might convince confused young people to decide that they are non-binary or trans. And so with the news of another prominent person identifying as transgender coming out of the Nashville story, is it okay to ask where all of this has come from? What was uniquely rare as recently as 2017 seems now to be increasingly common. I use the year 2017 because it was a shock to many when National Geographic, in their January issue of that year, featured the title of that issue, Gender Revolution, and put a 9-year-old transgender child on the cover. That was avant-garde then. We seem to read about this kind of thing everywhere now, and it's become almost ho-hum. I was asked not to speak about it in 2017 on a series of interviews I was doing then. Today, everyone speaks about it, mostly from One Direction. But the notion that it has become so much more the common cannot possibly be because we've implanted the idea, suggesting it, normalizing it. Can it be? We can't possibly think that, can we? The headline of import here is that the transgender youth population has doubled in the last 5 years. That gets you to about 2017, doesn't it? And that, we are told, is just to have happened as we destigmatized a condition that was always there, always extant, just afraid of revealing itself. None of it was encouraged, suggested, or inspired, right? You know where we don't believe this? As I said yesterday, with the awful and awfully delicate issue of suicide. Decades of research suggests that suicide is a socially contagious behavior, especially in youth, which is why we have the phrase suicide ideation, the giving of the idea of it, and why we are or used to be so conscientious of it. Marcy Bowers, a gynecologist who is the president of the World Professional Association for Transgender Health, told the New York Times this recently, quote, "There are people in my community who will deny that there's any sort of social contagion. I shouldn't say social contagion, but at least peer influence on some of these decisions. I think that's just not recognizing human behavior," close quote. Rich Lowry puts it that Dr. Bowers is a bit of an outlier. However, Bowers is an exception. It takes as an article of faith among trans activists and much of the left that social contagion is a pernicious myth. This denial is based on the idea that people, especially young people, aren't suggestible. As if what we are told, what our friends do and say, what signals we get from society aren't enormously important. And as if awareness and encouragement of transgenderism, non-binary status, and heretofore unknown genders haven't increased dramatically. This is where our culture war stands right now. With an empowerment of lunacy focused almost exclusively at our nation's children, using our children as the infantry for adults' political ground and air wars, and unbeknownst to them at that. It is to me little different from what many witnessed during the Iran-Iraq war, where Iranian children were used as minesweepers and given plastic keys to hang around their necks should they need them as they entered the kingdom of heaven, should they have stepped on a mine in the battlefield as they made it more safe for adults. None of this is right. All of it is wrong. Which is why it is, after all, important to believe not only in something, but in important things and not nonsense or lunacy. G.K. Chesterton once postulated that a cannibal in the 20th century may ask why his practice is not acceptable at Oxford University, and his fellow student would explain, "We just don't do that here." Whereas an earlier generation of student would have been able to give the reasons why. We've lost the reasons and reasoning, folks, and been forced to accept nonsense, nothingness, and lunacy, and we will now get more of it. And that, it seems to me, is a political war worth fighting. I'm Seth Leibson, 602-508-0960.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.